G'day guys, Clarkey here. Welcome back to the Set of Six Rugby League podcast. A bit of an off-season podcast, joined by Oliver, of course, our regular co-host. How are you, my man?
I am doing very well. Glad to be back in this chair talking to you after a little bit of a break this off-season. So I'm ready and I'm good to go, man.
And of course, you got a nice little bit of silverware, or I suppose it's goldware to you, your favourite player signed jersey in the background. How cool is that?
Yeah, got it framed for Christmas, and it's sort of relevant, I guess, because the news just released this morning that I literally just found out then before we started recording, Flash Michael Gordon coming out of retirement for the Nine. So there you go. Everything's relevant. Keeping it all relevant here.
It's pretty exciting. Imagine if in years to come, as the Nines becomes a bigger concept and format in our sport, if there was like a fans all-star voting where you could bring back one legend. I mean, obviously the player would have to consent to it, but I imagine if, you know, one and two said, oh, I'm busy, I've got family commitment, number three comes in, that'd be really cool. Let's start off the news today. BJ Leilua, yesterday the Sydney Morning Herald revealed he's met with the West Tigers. Rumours before that said Joey is interested in joining his younger brother Luciano, who joined the Tigers from the Dragons also. I kind of like this signing, man. I think with Curtis Scott at the Raiders, I've got Curtis Scott starting over him. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. Especially with what we saw from Scott towards the end of the 2019 NRL season, more specifically in the finals as well.
Yeah. But then looking at it a little bit deeper as well, for me, I think BJ Leilua was far too good to be I won't use the term bench warmer. The potential is certainly there, don't get me wrong, for BJ Leilua to come on in the last 20 minutes and just offload, break tackles, fast play the ball, be a devastating player in that regard. And that would work for him. But the issue would be, after he comes off this current contract, his value will just skyrocket downwards because he wouldn't no longer be viewed as a starting center. He'd be viewed as a bench impact player, which is probably the worst thing you can have as a player. Versatility seems to be, you know, some players just Achilles heels. They can't lock down a regular spot, and no doubt BJ Leilua wouldn't want that. So for me, if he was to make the move to the Tigers, I have him there starting. I'd put him straight in Isan Masters' right center role that he left. And for me, I can't see this being enough to get the West Tigers into the top eight. But, I mean, after missing Luttrell, it's a pretty good consolidation prize.
Well, I know that you and I are in two minds about the Tigers. So I know you've got them towards the bottom. I've actually got them just scraping into the eight due to them being able to keep the majority of their side from last season. That played particularly well. I mean, they did make the top eight, but they were there right at the end. So for me, it doesn't really change their ladder position, but, you know, it does bring a lot of upside. They do need to fill Isan Masters' role, for one. For two, they have the funds. So it'll be sort of a tantalizing prospect, I guess you could say, for Leilua. And three, for me, compared to his other options, it's probably the best option right now. Obviously, his brother Luciano was there. There were rumours probably a couple of months ago that he might have been off to the Bulldogs. Now, if I'm looking currently at the Bulldogs and the Tigers, who do I think will perform better next season? I'm going to say the Tigers. So in terms of success, Leilua, I believe, will probably have a better chance at success if he goes to the West Tigers. That's what I'm going to say as well. So I think the biggest upside is if he goes to the Tigers.
It really ties in with my past point as well about a player's value. You know, I think a lot of players are hesitant to go to the Bulldogs alone because they will be that main man in a rebuilding squad, or what is viewed as a rebuilding squad. Yeah. One thing just to get that quickly out here about the Bulldogs, I see a lot of people saying with the salary compensation, they should sign XYZ, but they can actually only sign a half back or a 5/8 with the salary compensation for Kieran Foran's injury. Yeah. So they can't, you know, for people saying, oh, BJ Leilua could earn the money from that, he can't because he's not a half there. Yeah, I think the Tigers is definitely his best landing location. He played with his brother there for Samoa, and all in all, I just think he's too good to be sitting on the bench there for the Raiders. A few people suggesting a move to the back row for BJ also. I don't necessarily like this either. He is coming back off a serious neck injury. And let's not forget, he was the Raiders' leading try scorer in 2018 and the Dally M Centre of the Year. So he, you know, just because he might have had a quiet year coming back from injury doesn't mean he's not a devastating center. And I would have concerns coming back from a serious neck injury that moving into the back row with more defensive workload probably isn't the smartest move for BJ at this stage of his career.
No, and you got to think as well, he's getting older. He's probably getting to that point where he's getting a bit beyond his prime. So a positional switch, especially from the backs to the forwards, I just can't see it happening, or I can't really see it ending that well. He might have the build, but after playing consistently for 10 years in that back line, it's tough to move to the front row and to the forward pack, and I just don't know if he'd really be able to do it.
Just thinking then, how many players have been able to make the move from the backs into the forwards? Luke Lewis is obviously the one that springs straight to mind. Chris McQueen, I believe he started as a winger. Sione Mataudia, did he start? I believe he played on the wing for a game for Australia.
Yeah.
There's not too many. It's a hard one to make.
The thing is as well, they were all relatively young.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
When they made that switch, they got to a certain point where they wanted to continue with their development in another position. It's a bit hard to sort of redevelop when you get to that certain age. What's Leilua now, about 28?
I believe he's 28, 29. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think he's just probably a bit past a positional change. But then again, if he does end up going to the West Tigers, which is looking likely right now, I'd say they need to use him more in the centres anyway. You know, he'd probably get the most out of his game in the centres at the Tigers. So I don't really see any confusion there if he does make the move.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll move on to the next topic now. Latrell Mitchell to fullback. Obviously, we don't really need to go into detail here. Everyone knows he signed with the South Sydney Rabbitohs. It was an absolutely huge post when I did post it. Believe it was actually the largest my page has ever seen on Instagram. Can you believe that? Latrell is big news, but I was even a little bit surprised. Here's some of the stats, because I was genuinely shocked to get this on Instagram. Almost 7,000 likes, but 5,000 people pressed the send button and sent it around to their friends, which shows how big news Latrell Mitchell is. You know, this was the biggest story of the offseason, and I mean, what do you think? What do you think? I mean, Latrell Mitchell, the fullback of the South Sydney Rabbitohs.
I don't know. I sort of, when I first made a post about it, I was sort of like, oh, I don't know, because Adam Dewey was performing well.
He was.
At the fullback role. So I do feel kind of bad that he's been, you know, that sort of, that hard work's gone, you know, unrewarded, I guess you could say. However, when I do look at the Rabbitohs lineup, if you play Latrell anywhere other than fullback, so the centres, which is where you would play him, you're leaving out either James Roberts.
Hard to do.
Or Braden Burns.
Also hard to do.
Exactly. So neither of those guys deserve to be dropped either. Arguably more so than Adam Dewey. So, yeah, it is tough. And I would like to see Dewey play at fullback and would like to see Latrell in the centres, because he's been so electrifying there the past couple of seasons. But when you sort of look at for the betterment of the squad as a whole, for the team as a whole, you probably play Latrell at fullback.
Yep.
And then again, he hasn't played there for a couple of seasons, so we don't know if he'll hit the ground running. And it's also just a matter of the fact that this entire off season, everything that's gone down has gone down, you know, so he's going to have a lot of eyes on him. So we'll just have to see how he does. You know, I reckon this might take a couple of weeks, but in the long run, it's for the betterment of his team. So
I agree. I would say the biggest pro for the Rabbitohs as a team, if they want to do this, they have Latrell Mitchell, a left-footed goal kicker who can kick from the left sideline, and they have Reynolds, a right-footed conversion taker who can kick from the right. So they, you have to imagine their conversion rate. As good as Adam Reynolds is at kicking goals, he does struggle from that left-hand side, as a lot of right-foot kickers do. So that is a big pro for him. A pro for Latrell, for me, he joins probably now with him one of the best back lines in the competition. We're talking Latrell, Campbell Graham. We're talking Braden Burns, James Roberts, Dane Gagai, Cody Walker, Adam Reynolds, and Adam Doey as depth, which is, you know, seems crazy with the footy he's been playing. So for me, that's a massive pro there. A con for the team. I think you just raised it perfectly. Where does this leave Adam Doey? He's been there. He was brought there from a junior, by Michael Maguire. And rumours today that I'm just hearing, I think the Sydney Morning Herald reported on this also as official, the Tigers are planning to make Adam Doey an offer within the next 48 hours. And as we just said, Michael Maguire was the man that brought him to the Rabbitohs, so he could bring him to the Tigers also. That remains to be seen whether he likes the deal, but that's obviously a con for the team if they lose a 21-year-old with a ton of upside in Adam Doey. And a con for Latrell, if I had to pick a con there, I'd say probably the fact that he has started his preseason later than everyone else. Yep. Don't get me wrong, I still think 2 months is plenty of time to get yourself to a some level of fitness. Match fitness is obviously different, but he'll still be fit coming into the season. But more so the shape and structure, which is a lot more important when you're in the fullback role. When they play Doey at fullback, given he grew up as a halfback and a 5'8", they have that playmaking ability. Riz Latrell is going to have to sort of adapt to that, and coming into preseason later won't help that. So I think that's a con there. But one thing that is interesting, and I've got to ask, does Latrell playing fullback affect his chances of getting back into this blue State of Origin side, from your opinion?
I don't know if it affects it any more than it already is being affected, if you get what I mean. Because I think there is a bit of a... there are some question marks over whether, at least in 2020, he will be selected for the Blues again. For one reason, well, they won the series without him. They won two games without him. They don't necessarily need to put him back in the side. In 2018, though, you look back there at the amazing series he had, there was obviously, you know, that bit of controversy over Origin 1. There's talks of Freddie Fittler. You know, what's his thoughts on Latrell? We don't know. It's all a bit of a muddle right now. But to answer your question, I don't think Latrell playing fullback at the Rabbitohs will sort of add anything to that. I think we're sort of at a point now where we just really don't know what the future holds for Latrell Mitchell as a New South Wales Blue, I reckon.
Yeah, I don't think it affects his chances, given the fact we see Tom Trbojevic, who's a fullback, play centre anyway. For me, it really rests on one thing. Who plays in the halves? Do they go... Luke Keary has to be there. I think we all agree on that. But whether that's at 5'8" or halfback, we don't know. The 5'8" could be Jack Whiten, or Keary could play 5'8" with current halfback Mitchell Pearce, or the man who played Game 1 and 2, Nathan Cleary. So they have so many options there. But I imagine if Jack Whiten is selected at 5'8", Luke Keary would be the halfback. Pearce and Cleary would have to feel very unlucky to miss out. But that does open up the centre position for Latrell. And then my only other question mark is, how much does Bronson Cherry develop after a second NRL preseason? And now he's coming in as an established NRL player. Does that give him more confidence, or does that make him feel comfortable? Does his game grow? Does it go backwards? Does it sort of sit stale? Because for me, Bronson Cherry is the future New South Wales centre, but how soon he gets there is my question mark. And they're really the only roadblocks I see for Latrell at the moment. And we can only really speculate. I mean, we can't sit here and go, Keary and, let's go, Jack Whiten will be the halves for the Blues. We don't know. And this is before we've even brought up Luke Brooks, Chad Townsend, Mitchell Moses into the equation, right?
Yeah, exactly. You just got to think of it about it as well. There are so many things that could happen. You know, Nathan Cleary, for me personally, would arguably get better this season with a more game-controlling role. It's how he seemed to play in the past. Yeah. If he has control of the side, he does generally play better. So do you take that into account? If he was in control of the Blues and did have a more dominant role, would that be for the betterment of the side? You know, Mitchell Pearce has finally won a series now. Mitchell Moses came off, you know, he was the halfback of the year last season, so we can't leave him out.
If he keeps improving, he's impossible to leave out.
Oh, yeah.
World Nines player of the tournament. And yeah. For me, the biggest draw card he has is he worked with Freddie Fittler at the international level for Lebanon, and they have a close bond. Freddie wanted to select him in 2018.
Yeah.
Until the Eels got the wooden spoons, which made it too tough to justify the selection. Yeah.
Well, you got to think as well, Joey Johns has just joined the Eels as well.
Yeah, that's a huge card in his corner.
Yeah, their sort of spine coach, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously with the New South Wales Blues set up as well. So there is a lot of upside. But let's just say the Eels do have a season again where, I'm not saying they will, but let's just say they do sort of drop down significantly or whatever. Maybe then he misses out. But as long as he stays fit and can keep up relatively with his back end 2019 form,
mm-hmm.
I can't see him not being selected. But yeah, it has to be right now. If anyone had to guess, the popular consensus would be Cleary and Moses.
Mm-hmm. For me, the biggest question mark, and I know we're getting a little bit off topic, for Mitch Moses is his defense. He does miss typically a lot of tackles, and when you miss tackles in Origin, you will be targeted by David Fifita and Felice Kaufusi on that edge. Yeah. All right, hear me out on this. If I have to predict Latrell Mitchell and grade his 2020 season 1 out of 10, I'm giving him a 7. He starts the year slow, looking a little unfit. He takes time to adjust, but once he finds his stride at fullback, he is breaking tackles, he is scoring at will, and I believe he is making 80-meter runaway tries like we saw Jared Hayne and Greg Inglis do so many times in that position throughout their career. Give it a 1 to 10 for yourself, and how do you see Latrell going in 2020?
I'm going to bump it up to an 8.
Okay.
Similar arguments. But I think at the start of the season as well, there'll be a huge microscope on Latrell Mitchell as well.
That's true.
We'll be watching his every move. We'll be critiquing every little thing he gets wrong. Even if every other player on his side is doing it, it'll be his fault. He'll be the one doing everything wrong. So at first, he's going to have a whole lot of pressure on him, and he's probably going to look like he's playing worse than he is, even if he's playing all right. But as the season goes on, and you notice this with the big stories coming in from the off-season, they sort of slowly drift away a little bit, and the attention sort of turns to someone else, turns somewhere else. Well, so as that sort of happens as well, sorry to interrupt, I do think Latrell will progressively get a lot better throughout the season. As he said, he hasn't had the longest preseason either, so he'll probably have to do some of the adjustments and, you know, sort of the gelling and getting ready for a big season, sort of partway into the 2020 NRL season.
Yeah, you're spot on there. And what I was going to interject and say was you're absolutely correct with the focus will shift elsewhere, because if we think back a few months ago, the focus was on David Fifita, and he was going to be the one signing with the Warriors and the Rabbitohs and all these other teams, and then we saw it shift to Latrell. You're absolutely right. It'll be tough with the microscope on him, but it will shift elsewhere eventually. Let's move on to the Canberra Raiders. They're a big off-season talking point, obviously, because they've switched out their halfback, Aiden Caesar, who is now the captain of the Huddersfield Giants. They switched him out for George Williams, who plays for England. He's played for Great Britain, I believe. He came off the bench in one of their losses. He's won competitions over there with Wigan. In 2018, he played with John Bateman and Ryan Sutton and won with Wigan. He's played with Matty Bowen, I believe, at Wigan. He's played with a lot of great players, and the seeming consensus is he is a great player. Look, halfbacks, fullbacks, wings, backs of all kind have, in the past, in the NRL, struggled coming over from the Super League. But we shouldn't blanket George Williams with that, because you know, it's unfair to label every single player because of previous players. So I'm giving him the complete. I've got no doubt over this signing. I'm going to give him every chance to come in and perform for the Raiders. When you do very well the season before, you want to adapt and change your game plan slightly. Yeah. You don't want to overhaul your whole playbook and system, and you don't want to remain the exact same. By doing that, you know, you risk being found out by other teams.
Yep.
For an example, I'll probably have to use Parramatta Eels 2017 to 2018. Yep. They didn't adjust. They didn't change their game, and that's why they struggled. The Raiders, by making this signing, do change their game ever so slightly, which for me has to be a positive.
It does, but there are sort of other aspects of the George Williams signing that could hinder the Raiders a little bit. So, for one, just the move over from England for any player, it can have an impact on your game. I think there will definitely be an adjustment period where he has to work his game out with Jack White, because from the minimal sort of Super League I've seen last season as well, he was really the dominant half and was in control. He's not going to be able to do that at Canberra, because Jack White has sort of, you know, he sort of made that role his own, so they've got to kind of work something out. So I think at least for the first few weeks, you might see what we saw with Luke Keary and Cooper Cronk at first at the Sydney Roosters. A lot of people forget at the start of 2018, the Sydney Roosters really weren't playing that well, and it looked like Keary and Cronk really weren't gelling. I think we might see that in the beginning with Williams and Whiten. And it's not that they won't be getting along or whatever. It's just that on the field, there'll be sort of that bit of confusion where I was like, oh, you know, I'm the guy that's in control. You know, you got to, they just really got to work something out. Maybe they'll get it done in the off season. I don't know. Yeah, it's a lot different planning something to when you're actually out on the field. So I do think there will be that bit of an adjustment period for George Williams. And look, for any player from England that is coming over to an NRL club, the Raiders are obviously the best team to come to. I'll even go further than that. If you're a Wigan Warriors player coming over, the Raiders would be the best club to come to, because you've got Big Johnny there. I believe, was it Ryan Sutton played there as well? So, you know, he's got ex-teammates there who would undoubtedly, you know, take him under their wing. Yeah, I think I saw John Bateman put on Instagram the other day. He was out. It was just him. Yeah, it was just the English boys, and George Williams was there, and they were out having a couple of drinks. So hopefully that sort of eased George Williams into the Australian life a bit more, where he can sort of focus on his rugby league.
I agree. No doubt there'll be an adjustment period. There just will be until they figure out which one likes to run with this shape and structure, which one likes to put in a short kick, which one likes to play the right side more, the left side more. There undoubtedly will be a period where the Raiders have to adjust slightly. I think they will struggle a little bit at the start of the year, like you said, the Roosters did in 2018. For me, the biggest storyline for the Raiders in 2020, it won't be how well they do. It won't be whether they win the comp or lose the comp. Unless they finish bottom four, that would obviously steal the headline. But this headline will be very, very prevalent. Releasing Aiden Caesar was a massive mistake, and that is if they finish in the bottom eight. If they finish in the top eight, Ricky does it again. You know, he brings in another POM with Whitehead, Bateman, Sutton, Hodgson. He brings in another POM. Like, he just keeps knowing how which ones to sign.
Yeah.
Because if George Williams does come in and struggle, who comes in? Sam Williams. And, you know, he can do the job partially. He's an NRL journeyman to a large extent, though. And I don't see the Raiders winning a competition or making a grand final with him at halfback. Whereas with Aiden Caesar, we know they can, because they did.
Yeah.
So for me, top eight, Ricky does it again. Bottom eight, releasing Caesar, a massive mistake. If I had to ask you which one of those you see more likely, I assume you have to play it safe and say top eight. I'd probably lean that way also.
Yeah, I don't think Canberra will finish in the top four again.
No, you don't think?
I don't think so.
Would you say they're a chance, or you just don't see it happening?
They're a chance, but right now I've got them in. I haven't got them just making the finals or anything. So I think, you know, around where I've got them, but I haven't got them in the top four. I just, other teams have improved as well.
That's true.
A big thing for me. Parramatta for one. I mean, you even look at South Sydney, who I think could still regress a little bit. They've added to their roster. Manly, as long as they stay fit, they should be up there. Even if they have a couple of injuries, they've still got an amazing squad. For me, the Storm and Roosters, they're well coached. They've got two top coaches, and that's the big thing for me. And they have, obviously, an amazing roster.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be hard. You even look at the Cronulla Sharks, if all their players are on. I mean, it's going to be tough for Canberra. And I just can't see them finishing in the top four again. It's that thing you alluded to way at the start. You were talking about how teams who unexpectedly do well one season generally seem to think we'll just do the same thing again and it should work.
Yep.
Which, you know, when we think about it now, okay, just don't fix what isn't broke, right? Well, you do need to change things up enough to keep teams guessing.
Mm.
So teams don't just instantly work you out. You know, this is why we haven't had a back-to-back premiership winner until 2019, since 1993, because every year it gets to about the halfway point of the season, or, you know, for some teams a bit later on, and they just get worked out. So that's a big worry for me for the Canberra Raiders. They haven't made back-to-back final series since 2004. Now, the most recent example of that was after they finished second in 2016, they went on to finish 10th in 2017. Same coach, not exactly the same roster, obviously, but multiple same players. So hopefully that was a good learning experience for the Raiders. And I do see them breaking that hoodoo in 2020, but I don't see them reaching the same heights as they did in 2019. I just can't see it happening again with what I said with Williams taking a bit of time to ease himself into the squad. I still think guys like John Bateman and Chance Nipel-Klokstad will have amazing seasons. Will they quite reach the same heights? Will they surpass it? That's the big question for me, those two guys as well. So, yeah, I guess I'm sort of playing it safe, or I'm not putting Canberra too high again, but I'm not putting them too low either. So I've got them in the bottom half of the top eight.
Fair call. They're an interesting team to watch next year. And another interesting team to watch will be the North Queensland Cowboys, who have signed Esan Masters and Valentine Holmes. Michael Morgan will be back uninjured. Scott Drinkwater or Jake Clifford will have their chance at 5'8". Reece Robson is going to push Jake Granville for that number 9 spot. Oz, there is finally some competition for spots at the Cowboys. And you know what? I think that makes them a dangerous team. When I look back at where it went all wrong the last couple of years, I think guys like Scott Bolton, like Gavin Cooper, Cohen Hess, they got a little bit too comfortable. They knew their spot was secured in first grade and they didn't perform to their very best. Now, players like Cohen Hess have young guns like Shane Wright breathing down their neck for not only the starting spot, but potentially their spot in the whole 17. I think Valentine Holmes comes back, hits the ground running. I think if Kyle Felt, who missed the first half of last year injured but still finished as their leading try scorer, I think if Kyle Felt remains fit all year, if Michael Morgan fires and finds his best form like 2017, where he was halfback of the year, there is no way this Cowboys side is missing the top eight. I think they could even press into the top four if all of those predictions come true in a perfect world for the Cowboys. But you know what? Injuries exist. No one's always at their peak in form. I'll play it safe. I've got them in the top eight. The bottom four of that top eight, I've got them around fifth or sixth mark. How do you see the Cowboys going next year, and where you got them finishing?
I've got the Cowboys contending for the finals, maybe missing out on four and against. Yes,
so that
I do have
8 to 12 mark, sort of 8 to 10, 8 to 12. Yep.
You could even say 7th to 11th.
Okay. Right?
Something around there. But I do have them just missing out on my ladder. In your argument, whilst it was compelling, I did hear a lot of if.
Yep.
That's the thing. As in the Cowboys, whilst the signing of Holmes and Masters is definitely a positive, there are still stuff that side needs to work out.
A lot of question marks.
Yeah, exactly. For one, see, for me personally, if Valentine Holmes plays at fullback, it's fine. He is great at the fullback role. And yeah, even if he does have, you know, some stuff to work out coming back from the NFL, he should perform relatively well there eventually. However, if I look at the current setup of the Cowboys side, they could probably do with an all-star winger more than a fullback, because they signed Scott Drinkwater last year, and he did relatively okay in the minimal game time we saw him have there. Personally, for me, if I'm looking at the entire Cowboys setup and what I believe would be the best for the Cowboys as a whole, I would play Valentine Holmes on the wing, because whilst I believe he's a very good fullback, he's better on the wing, as most players are, right?
Mm.
And Drinkwater, I do think he's more of an out-and-out fullback. I'm fine with Holmes playing that fullback role, because I think, you know, there is a question over whether or not he will hit the ground running as soon as he comes back in 2020. Understandably so, coming back from the NFL. But personally for me, whilst he is a great fullback, I believe he is a better winger. And if I look at the Cowboys side as a whole, they could do with an all-star wing partnership, because one of the main things I was saying last season about the Cowboys was they needed another center and they needed another winger. And they've got the center in Isan Masters. They could have that winger in Valentine Holmes. Imagine Holmes partnering Kyle Felt. You know, that would arguably be the Queensland partnership, possibly. So I sort of look at it like that, but I'm fine with Holmes playing the fullback role anyway. The forward pack as well, whilst they do on paper have an amazing forward pack, and a forward pack that performed very well right up until sort of that 2018-19 mark, guys like Gavin Cooper, Colin Hess were out of form last season. Can they just recapture that form? We know they're capable. They're capable, but, you know, it can be hard to rekindle that form once it's been lost for a little while.
Mm.
Another player, Michael Morgan. Hopefully we've got his halves partner set. Maybe it's Jake Clifford, Scott Drinkwater, possibly. However, he did have a bit of trouble gelling with halves partners last season. At the start of the season, I remember Tamari Martin said, you know, publicly, he said, "Oh, myself and Michael Morgan, we haven't really, you know, we're not really set on, you know, how we want to play." And that was a bit worrying for me. And of course, what happened with Tamari was very upsetting. He did have to announce his retirement recently.
Mm.
But it sort of from then on, we didn't have a set halves partner for Michael Morgan. And there was glimpses of great things, but I think that's a huge thing as well, finding the right partner for Morgan and then Morgan performing well with that partner. Because if not, that's the key for me. If not, guys like Valentine Holmes, no matter where he's playing on the field, he's not going to get as good ball. You know, you're not going to have the forwards running off the halves as dominantly, I guess you could say. So that's the big thing for me for the Cowboys. Can Michael Morgan find his halves partner, and can he perform well with that player?
Two counterpoints for me there. For me, Valentine Holmes is definitely a fullback after his last year there. Based on the fact he had more line breaks than James Tedesco and Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, I think when we look at who the best fullback is in the world, we compare those two, RTS and Tedesco. And for Valentine Holmes to have started the year at fullback, had a rusty start, but then come good and have more line breaks than them both, I think that's the sort of X factor the Cowboys are missing. So for me, he has to be a fullback there. And that's before I even really encompass the fact that he's on $1 million salary. Yep. I would never pay a winger $1 million unless, you know, I probably wouldn't even pay Sammy Radradra $1 million, actually. I can't see any winger ever earning that. And Scott Drinkwater, although he does look fantastic at fullback, I think he's going to be one of those players that can excel in multiple positions. Someone that can play 5-8, someone that can play center, fullback. And he played halfback his whole junior career in under-20s, etc. And he's had a full preseason there also. So I think a full preseason of Scott Drinkwater as a running 5-8, Michael Morgan as a controlling halfback, and Valentine Holmes as a line breaker with X-Factor, I think that's enough to propel the Cowboys into the top eight. Final prediction for me, I say they finish around fifth.
Okay, I can see where you're coming from too. I know I've got them missing the top eight, but they're one of those sides,
they are.
Definitely, where if is the big thing.
Mm.
If everything goes right, they're up there. Everything goes wrong, they could be around where they were last season even.
Let me ask you this question before we move on. If the Cowboys do miss the top eight, should they sack Paul Green and bring in a new head coach?
I hate blaming coaches for things, but there does come a point where if the team's not performing to a standard for long enough, it is time to try something new. Even if it's not necessarily that coach's fault, you need to shake things up to maybe get a reaction from the players, or find a coach that sort of better suits those players. You know, we have heard rumours throughout 2019 that Paul Green had lost the locker room, and maybe they are a bit hesitant to sack him because he is the coach that brought the club their first premiership in 2015. However, from 2018 onwards, there comes a point where you've got to... you've got to say enough's enough, right? So 2018 didn't perform well. JT was in the last season of his career. I'd say he regressed a bit, and it did sort of show. 2019, their first year without JT, maybe you can excuse that. 2020, though, you talk about all the ifs. I was probably a bit more pessimistic. You were more optimistic. If you look at all those optimistic ifs, there's a lot of upside to the Cowboys this season, more than there probably has been since JT was at the club. So I sort of look at that, and although I'm not predicting they'll finish in the top eight, I reckon their board certainly will be. And if around mid-season it looks like they might not hit that top eight, then I would probably heavily consider parting ways with Paul Green.
Yeah, I agree. If they miss the top eight this season, for me, that's 3 years in a row where they've had an incredible roster and should have been top eight. Even to the point where people say JT regressed in his last year. He led the NRL in try assists in his final year. Like, if you have a halfback leading the NRL in try assists, like we saw Mitch Moses last year with the Eels, you should be up in the top eight, no questions asked. So for me... Cowboys don't make top eight. They have to say bye-bye to Paul Green. And realistically, they have to move him on. Let's do one last topic here before we round out the podcast. We've been going for about 38 hours. Wow, that would be a long podcast. 38 minutes. So
yeah.
We are under our usual time. Let's talk about the NRL ladder in 2020. I want to get your biggest slider and your biggest improver. For me, I'll start with improver. So I've got the Manly Seagulls as my biggest improver. Yeah. I think they are a chance for the minor premiership. I think they're a chance to win the premiership. And I think they're almost a lock for the top four. And my opinion of Manly just has continued to grow this offseason. I can't remember where I had them on my initial ladder predictor. But they were in the top four, and my opinion of this club continues to grow. I think if Tom Trbojevic comes in and stays healthy the whole year, not only do I think he's a chance for the Dally M medal, I think he's a lock for fullback of the year over Tedesco and RTS. I just think he is. He's 24. He seems to be hitting his peak, and he is so dangerous. Jake Trbojevic, his game is built on hard work. He will not regress at all. I think they have two of the best front rows in the entire game. I think they have one of the best halfbacks in the entire game. And I think whoever plays in those remaining roles on the bench, in the back row, and in the center's wings, it doesn't matter, because we saw last year players come in and they just do their job for Dez Hasler. He's a very, very good people's man. Sean Kepi, for example, coming in, getting his first win in the NRL in the finals, I believe, which is, you know, phenomenal for the young prop. If Dez Hasler can continue that trend and the players that he coaches keep coming in and doing the jobs regardless of injuries, I see Manly having a phenomenal year, and potentially even challenging for the minor premiership. So that's mine. Who have you got for your biggest improvement next year?
Well, I've really got Manly as well.
Yeah.
I think they're a top four side. I pretty much agree with all your arguments. I mean, it's weird. I do say that as long as Manly stay fit, they should be a lock for the top four. But even if they do have a couple of injuries, even to a guy like Tom Trbojevic, who when he was on the field for Manly in 2019 was arguably their best player, he missed about half the season with Brendan Elliott coming in and performing very well. And they still managed to finish sixth on the ladder. So, you know, obviously, I agree with you too. I believe Trbojevic will probably be the fullback in the NRL in 2020 if he stays fit. So that's the only real thing that comes into question with me. Manly have an amazing side, and whilst there might be an argument that they don't have any depth, well, if last season's anything to go by, they do. They're just unproven stars that Dez can mould in his sort of image and get them playing amazingly. So I am going to go with the Sea Eagles. If I'm talking about sort of literally progressing in terms of how far I've got a team moving up the ladder, I've got the Cowboys, who I said I've still got missing the eight, but I believe they finished 14th last season. I've got them finishing 9th in 2020. So, you know, a big improvement there. And I think we will see it with the Cowboys as well, with sort of the way they play, and they will be contending for the top eight. So, you know, to agree with you, Manly, sort of realistically in terms of improvers, but if we're looking, you know, physically on the ladder, I'll go to the Cowboys.
And for my biggest slide, I've gone with the West Tigers. I've got them finishing in the bottom four. I've got a lot of reasons for this, but I will restrict it to just three because I don't want this to sort of turn into a bag session, particularly when we both support the club that actually did win the Wooden Spoon last year. So my first reason is Luke Brooks, their halfback, their main man. A lot of people seem to have this consensus online that if Luke Brooks fires, the West Tigers play finals. And I believe that's absolutely false. Luke Brooks was the halfback of the year in 2018, and he was the Tigers player of the year in 2018 and 2019.
Yeah.
When I look at that, I can't see him going to much more higher standard. So I can rule that out and say that for the Tigers to finish in the top eight, Luke Brooks firing will not be a factor. Number two, they lose Robbie Farah, and therefore they lose an established, experienced hooker. And I think a lot of people forget just how good Robbie Farah was playing last year prior to his injury. Supercoach fans certainly knew, but he was relatively quiet in terms of discussion to how well he was playing. Who replaces him? I can tell you now at this stage, it's not Billy Walters. He's been training in the halves this preseason. Is it Josh Reynolds? He has allegations lying over his head currently. He has no NRL match fitness. He can play hooker for 20 minutes or so, but I can't see him defending there for the full 80. Jake Simpkin is on a development deal. He cannot play until after June 30. And Jacob Liddell is continuing his rehab from an ACL injury, where we know even if he rushes back and comes back early, players are never at 100% in their first year back from ACLs. Those two reasons there. And third, Benji Marshall is only getting older. As good as Benji is, guys, he's not going to improve on how he played last year. He might maintain that standard and improve ever so slightly, but those ever so slightly improvements will not be enough to boost the Tigers into the top eight. It just won't. Benji Marshall is a legend. For me, he's a Hall of Famer. He's possibly the greatest Kiwi ever. He revolutionized the way young players like Kalen Ponga and Roger Tuivasa-Sheck play the NRL. But if you are going to sit here and tell me, coming into this new decade, that Benji Marshall is going to improve out of sight, out of mind, I can't buy it. If you told me in 2010, yes, I believe you. And finally, the cherry on top, who goal kicks for the West Tigers? Is it Paul Momorowski? I don't believe they have an established goal kicker. Now, shove a pie in my face if I've said that and I'm incorrect, but I'm going through their lineup in my head right now, and I can't see them having an established goal kicker there. Am I incorrect in that?
You could say Benji, but I mean, he's not really been
not over his goal career. Kicker
for, and he hasn't been for a while, probably since switch to rugby union days. So, I mean, you could make an argument for him, but he's not been the goal kicker for about 10 years or so.
Mm-hmm. So well, they're my reasons for my slide for the West Tigers. Am I prepared to have a pie shoved in my face and my own team, the Titans, turn around and win the wooden spoon again? Yeah, I am, but I hope that bloody doesn't happen. Up the Titans, and sorry, Tigers fans. I mean, if it wasn't your club, I've got to sort of assess another club and hand out some reasons. It's nothing against the Tigers personally. They're only my thoughts and opinions from the mind of a 22-year-old rugby league fan, realistically. Who's your biggest slider for 2020?
The New Zealand Warriors. Now, they're sort of, I guess, my Tigers as in, I think they're the team who might surprise the Titans to win the wooden spoon.
Yep.
And I know what you everyone's instantly thinking, but they have Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. Yes, they do. He's an amazing player, probably someone who does way too much for that football club, way too much than what he needs to. Yes, the Warriors do have RTS, and I think they have for years sort of rested on that in a sense, where he has been the main man, as he should be. He runs the show, but he doesn't have enough help. He doesn't, and every year they keep expecting the Warriors to do well because of Tuivasa-Sheck, I feel, which should not be the case, and they just sort of regress. They just made the top eight that was the season where it was like the whole top eight could have finished minor premiers on the last round of the season, but you know, there was that one season. However, then they've just sort of since regressed, and I sort of look at their squad as a whole. While there are some decent players, I haven't seen enough intent over the off season to improve from the Warriors. They need a hooker, in my opinion, sort of a bit more of an established hooker. They've gone inside. Excuse me, Wade Egan from Penrith, who...
Yeah, I was going to ask, would you have him at hooker? Would you have Carl Lawton? Would you have Nathaniel Roach coming back from an ACL, though? Or would you consider Jazz Tavanga? Who would be your Warriors hooker?
It's hard. I'd consider Tavanga just because of, you know, he sort of stood out individually. But then again, do you want to play Tavanga maybe at lock?
I prefer him at lock.
Yeah. So I guess you would have to go Wade Egan, who, he's someone who showed... He impressed a bit at Penrith, right, when he did play. But then again, nothing too amazing. Nothing that the Warriors necessarily need right now. Is Wade Egan the guy that's going to take a lot of the pressure off Roger Tuivasa-Sheck? No, I don't think he is. Could Cody Nikorima possibly move into hooker transition? Maybe, but then again, it's, you know, sort of as big as a risk as playing Wade Egan at hooker. Tuivasa-Sheck does need some help, definitely. Yeah. and I just can't, I can't see any intent to get him that help right now. I can't see any intent to move forward. I feel like the Warriors are sort of just resting on their laurels a fair bit. And again, sort of expecting RTS to sort of lead them to the promised land, which, he's not going to do it alone. You look at any great player, you look at the Melbourne Storm Big Three had each other. You look at the Sydney Roosters the past couple of seasons, you know. Yes, Cooper Cronk was the main man in 2018, but you know what? Luke Keary improved a lot.
Yep.
So did James Tedesco. You had Latrell Mitchell. If I look at the New Zealand Warriors, they've got RTS. What have they got around him? What have they got to help him out? What other, you know, good... And I'm not saying the Warriors players aren't quality, but sort of consistent players... have they got around Roger Tuivasa-Sheck? Because it's even started to impact his game. He does so much where...
He has an error,
exactly. You know, just naturally, if you're doing more of the work, if you're having so much control, errors are going to start slipping into your game.
Yep.
And I noticed that in 2019. It wasn't necessarily like that he was overrun by errors, but it was just sort of silly mistakes. Mistakes
fatigue
that you
wouldn't expect. Setting in.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I remember a couple of times throughout the season, he'd simply just drop a high ball that was kicked to him on the last, stuff like that. And the Warriors really couldn't afford it from him, and it made him look bad. But I feel like he just needs that help. And I can't see him getting that help in 2019 because I don't think there's any intent to move forward. Would sacking Stephen Kearney help? I mean, again, I hate saying you need to sack a coach, but when is enough going to be enough in terms of Stephen Kearney? Like,
particularly the fact he has the lowest win percentage of any NRL coach. And if I can just cut in, the thing that's upsetting about this for the Warriors is they shouldn't be in this situation because they released Sean Johnson last year and they said, you know what? We're going to hold on to our chips. We're not going to rush into the market. We're going to sign the right halfback that we need. A few months later, Cody Nikorima was playing so poorly for the Brisbane Broncos. They said, you know what? Any takers. Who wants Cody? And the New Zealand Warriors, months before, promised their fans and members we will pick the right halfback. And in my opinion, they signed a very similar version to Sean Johnson, a ball-running halfback, because that's what Cody Nikorima is. If Sean Johnson, who in my opinion is a former Golden Boot winner and the better player than Cody Nikorima, if he couldn't get the job done for the Warriors and take them to the promised land and the top eight, and then you turn around and promise your fans, we're going to sign the right halfback, someone like a Luke Brooks, who was available at the time, a Chad Townsend, who has previously played there and was coming off contract, a halfback that is a game-controlling halfback, that would allow a player like Chanel Harris-DeVita at 5'8 to run the football. They promised their fans a Mercedes, and they delivered a 1980 Corolla. And that's not to say that Cody Nikorima is a 1980 Corolla, because that's not true. He's a fantastic player. But he's not the player they promised, and he's not the player that the Warriors needed. And they shouldn't be in this situation, and they shouldn't have us here discussing them as ladder sliders. And yeah, that's just facts.
Yeah, you look back at, what was it, 2016, when RTS came in, Isaac Luke came in, they had Sean Johnson, you know, they had the foundation, and a lot of people had them winning the premiership, at least top four, and it didn't happen. You know, it's scary when the Gold Coast Titans, who had a very bad season, we can say that as Titans fans, when the Titans, to me, and as I said, it's a wooden spoon scrap between the Titans and the Warriors. I've not got the Titans in the top eight. But for me, the Titans look like they might have a bit more upside to the Warriors in 2020. At least they have more intent to improve. You know, they've signed a new coach. They've been public. They've been bringing in new staff. They've been, you know, looking to give guys opportunities over these sort of bigger name, big money players who haven't, you know, who just haven't delivered as a Gold Coast Titan. At least for me, with the Titans, we're seeing the intent to improve. May happen, may not. But with the Warriors, I just see no intent. I just see another season where we're like, oh, we've got Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. Don't worry, he'll get us out of it. Go out there, RTS, and win us a premiership.
Mm-hmm. It just can't happen.
Can't happen.
My biggest slider, the West Tigers. Your biggest slider, the New Zealand Warriors. That's pretty much us. We're at the 54th minute mark now, so that will wrap up our first podcast back in the new decade, the new year, the NRL off-season. Still, obviously, in effect. Still a couple months until it starts, but until it does, we can't make any promises. The podcast will be weekly, purely based on the burden of news. If there's no topics to discuss, we're not going to waste your guys' time and sit here and blabber on for an hour or so. We want the podcast to be interesting. We want it to be engaging. We want it to get you guys thinking and, talking to us on social media regarding some of these issues. So that's all from us today, guys. We will see you hopefully at another stage this off season. But until we do so, Dane from Clarkie's Rugby League column. You can find me on Instagram. I reply to every DM there. And over to you, Oz, to say goodbye to the viewers.
Yeah, Oz from Rugby League in My Opinion. You can find me at Rugby League in My Opinion on Facebook. You RL in My Opinion on Instagram. I've got that podcast going on now as well, just Rugby League in My Opinion again on Spotify right now. But yeah, look, if you're here right now, you probably know all the details, so I just want to say a huge thank you to you guys who have tuned in to this sort of return episode slash sort of just, you know, off-season feeling. As Clarkie said, we won't be here necessarily on a consistent basis throughout the off-season, but you know, if there's something to talk about, if there are enough topics, then you'll most likely see us sitting here chatting away about it. So just thanks, guys, and I'll see you next time.
Cheers for tuning in, guys.